Hello, and welcome back to the second hour of A Voice of a People, live here with Linda Sims on WGH Talk. Thank you for tuning in. We also stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can also download a free app called TuneIn on any electronic device, iPhones, cell phones, laptops, or computers, any electronic devices that receives apps. And search WWGH, or you can call in during this live broadcast if you have any questions or if you would like to make any comments. Please call 740-383-9944. Again, 740-383-9944. Also, for the second hour, those of you who may be just tuning in, I would like to share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 30 years of experience working for you. The owner is Cheryl Lee. Location, LaRue, Ohio. Phone, 740-262-0939. We have Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson of 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Number there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Their ongoing announcement, every third Saturday of every month, they have free produce. This will take place November the 19th, this coming Saturday, beginning at 12 noon until 2 p.m. Also, they will be having a drive-through Thanksgiving dinner pickup. November the 23rd, Thanksgiving Eve, it begins at 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Thank you, faithful listeners, for your support, and if it is your first time, I pray it will not be your last time. Thought for today, once again, is titled Choices. You always have a choice between building and destroying. It is not necessary to destroy something in order to change it. Destructive actions often cause pain or damage. Building gives hope. It enlightens. It strengthens. So always choose to build rather than to destroy. Hopefully, that thought for today will help you out. And if it did, you can share with someone you know that may need that bit of information or wisdom. Now I will turn my attention to my guest today, Fred Malone. Hi again, Fred.
Yes, thank you.
Looking forward to the second hour.
Well, I have some interesting presidential facts I want to start out with. And then I want to talk about the Wright brothers a little bit, who were famous Ohioans. I don't know whether your listeners or even you have heard of a gentleman by the name of David Rice Acheson. Does that name sound familiar to you?
No, it does not.
He was president of the United States for exactly one day.
Really?
Really.
One day.
One day. That all came about when James Polk was finishing his term as president. His term actually ended on a Saturday. Well, actually ended on a Saturday. And Zachary Taylor was to be his successor. Now, Zachary Taylor, being the religious man that he was, refused to be sworn in on Sunday. He wanted to be sworn in on Monday.
Okay.
And Polk, whose term officially ended at midnight on Saturday night, had already left Washington to go home. Mm-hmm. Now, in those particular days, the president pro tem, in the absence of the president, would have, or vice president, and by the way, the vice president had already gone home.
Okay.
The president pro tem would be in line of succession to be president of the United States. So, by virtue of the fact that James Polk had left town and his term expired at midnight on Saturday, and the vice president for Polk had already left Washington to go home, and Zachary Taylor would not be sworn in on Sunday, David Rice Acheson was President of the United States, technically for one day.
One day. History.
And I believe at the time, of course, he was a senator, and I believe he was from out in Missouri, somewhere out in that part. And in his hometown, there is a sign there that indicates that he was president for one day. some interesting tidbits about George Washington. George Washington grew marijuana in his garden at Mount Vernon.
Oh, really? What did he do with it? Did he smoke
it? I don't know.
Drink it? Make brownies? Or
it's hard to tell. But he did.
Oh, George. Okay.
George Washington was deathly afraid of being buried alive. Oh. After he died, he wanted to be laid out for 3 days just to be sure that he was dead before they put him in the ground, because they didn't embalm people in those days.
Okay.
So he didn't want to be buried. Now, there's an interesting side story that goes to that. A lot of the Victorian people were afraid of being buried alive. So they would drill a small hole in the casket, and a string would come through that hole with a loop on it, and the string went up through the ground and was attached to a bell by the tombstone.
Mm-hmm.
So that if the person woke up in their casket, realized that they were buried alive, they could pull that string and ring that bell, and the attendant at the cemetery would hear it, and that they could come and dig them up. That's where the expression "saved by the bell" came from.
Really?
Really.
Boy, I would never have guessed that story.
George Washington's false teeth were not made of wood, like everybody
people say,
says.
Right?
They were actually made of whalebone.
Okay.
Whalebone. George Washington had to borrow money to get to his own inauguration.
Different. A whole lot different nowadays, right?
Now, of course, George Washington was not inaugurated in Washington because Washington didn't exist then. The first capital of the United States was New York City. So he was inaugurated in New York.
Okay. Was that on Manhattan Island?
Well, it would have been probably, yeah. It would have mm-hmm. been in wherever the populace was at that
right,
time. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's probably where it was. Interestingly enough, the next president, John Adams, was inaugurated in Philadelphia because they had moved the capital from New York to Philadelphia.
Where the Liberty Bell is.
Right, right. Thomas Jefferson anonymously had submitted design plans for the White House. They were rejected. He was the first president to be inaugurated then in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and James Monroe all died on the 4th of July. Jefferson and Adams died at practically the same minute of the same day. And it's said that John Adams' last words were, "Thomas Jefferson lives." But actually, Jefferson had died a few minutes before Adams. But of course, he didn't know that.
Right, right.
Yeah. I always find this one interesting. There have been a lot of pets that have lived in the White House mm-hmm. over the years. Teddy Roosevelt, of course, the brood of kids he had, they had pets galore. They had everything from snakes to birds to raccoons to ponies to dogs to cats, you name it. John Quincy Adams, I think, had the most unusual pet. He owned an alligator. He had a pet alligator that he kept in the east room of the White House in a big tub.
Wow.
Now, interestingly enough, John Quincy Adams got that pet alligator from Lafayette. You remember Lafayette, who mm-hmm. was the French hero of the Revolutionary War? And I kind of think Lafayette must have gotten it from somebody else and didn't know what to do with it, so he gave it to John Quincy Adams.
Sounds like it, right?
John Quincy Adams... this is really funny. John Quincy Adams took his last skinny dip in the Potomac on his 79th birthday.
Skinny dip.
On the day he was inaugurated, he took his skinny dip in the Potomac River. He did that every day of his life until
wow.
he was 79 years old.
Even in the winter?
In the winter, in the summer, didn't matter. He took a skinny dip in the Potomac River. Ooh. He thought it was healthy.
Okay.
Now, interestingly enough, on the day of his inauguration, a female reporter for one of the Washington newspapers found out about his daily habit, followed him to the river, and waited until he was in the water and then hid his clothes so she could get an interview with him.
Oh, no.
And wouldn't give him back his clothes until he agreed to the interview.
Wow. I'm sure he was naked, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's skinny dipping. Andrew Jackson was the only president to believe that the world was flat. And up until the day he died, he believed the world was flat. When he was inaugurated president, after the inauguration, he threw open the doors of the White House and invited anybody that wanted to come in to come in. It was estimated that there were 10,000 people that rummaged through the White House that day and stole everything that wasn't nailed down, and whatever wasn't stolen was destroyed. By the time that party was over, there wasn't a stick of furniture that wasn't either broken or stolen left in the White House because of all his rowdy friends.
Oh, my.
The longest inaugural address by a U.S. president was given by William Henry Harrison. Of course, we all know that. It was an hour and 45 minutes long during an intense snowstorm. 1 month later, of course, he died of pneumonia.
Really?
Now, there's always been some speculation that it wasn't necessarily the speech that killed him because of the way he was dressed. He didn't have a coat on, nor did he have a hat on. But it was also known fact that he never wore a coat and a hat. And he had been out in other weather prior to his inauguration, so it could have just been added up to. But his address was the longest one in history, an hour and 45 minutes.
Outside in the cold.
Outside in the cold and in a driving snowstorm. Yeah.
Yeah. No wonder he got pneumonia.
John Tyler fathered 15 children.
Same woman?
Nope, he was married twice.
Okay.
15 children.
It's a lot.
Millard Fillmore, who we hear very little about.
Was he president too?
He was president. Millard Fillmore his mother feared that he may have been mentally retarded. But yet he became president of the United States.
Wow.
Very quiet man. James Buchanan, who Glenn Coble just portrayed for me at the dinner with the president, is said to have had the neatest handwriting of all of our presidents. And he was also the only unmarried president that we had. He was a bachelor. Never married.
Never married.
Never married. He did have a girlfriend at one time that he kept company with. And she met another man, married another man, and it totally destroyed James Buchanan, and he never married as a result of that.
Maybe he waited too late to ask her to marry him, huh?
Probably. Andrew Johnson was the only self-educated president. He had no formal education whatsoever, never even attended a one-room schoolhouse. He was a tailor. He is the only president to make his own clothes and those of his cabinet members.
That's very interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And his wife taught him how to read and write.
Okay.
Ulysses S. Grant, which actually isn't his real name, his name was Ulysses Simpson Grant. Hiram Ulysses Grant. His mother was a Simpson. He had the boyhood nickname of Useless. Useless.
What a nickname,
yeah.
Right?
And the reason for that was when he was a young man, he went to his father one day and said, "Father, I want to buy our neighbor, Mr. Hiram's horse." Mm-hmm. And his father said, "Useless, that horse is not a good horse." And Grant said, "But Father, I want that horse. Mr. Hiram wants $25 for it." His father said, "Useless, that horse is not worth $25. He's maybe worth $15. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to buy that horse, you go to him and you tell him you'll give him $15. And if he won't take the $15, tell him you'll go to $20. And if he absolutely will not take the $20 and you want the horse that bad, you can give him the $25. but don't pay the $25 unless you have to.
Go in and bargain first, right?
Right. So Grant goes to the man, says, "Sir," he said, "I'd like to buy your horse. My father says it's not even worth $15 or $20, but I'll give you $25 if you'll take it."
He skipped all through all that,
tipped
right?
Off, yeah, yeah, yeah. Abraham Lincoln. Of course, I think we all know that Abraham Lincoln had a wart on his face. If you look at every picture you'll ever see of Lincoln, he had a wart right here on his cheek.
Okay.
Yeah, take a look at that. His mother died when the family dairy cow ate poisonous mushrooms and Mrs. Lincoln drank the milk.
Oh, my.
She died at a very young age.
Oh, my.
Nancy Hank. Mm. Abraham Lincoln had a nervous breakdown in 1836. I think a lot of people do know that. His famous Gettysburg Address consisted of only 272 words. 272 words. And at the dedication of the cemetery at Gettysburg, the man that was asked to speak before the president was Edward Horvitt. Edward Horton, who was a poet and an author at the time. He spoke before the president. His speech lasted 2 hours.
Whoa.
Lincoln's speech had 272 words in it and lasted a mere few minutes.
Right.
Horton came up to Lincoln after Lincoln's address and said, "Mr. President, I think you said more in 3 minutes than I said in 2 hours." Before winning the presidential election in 1860, Abraham Lincoln had lost 8 elections before in various offices.
Well, he didn't give up, did he?
He didn't give up. Yeah, he didn't give up. If you will recall, he ran against Senator Stephen Douglas for Senate and lost that race.
Hmm.
He did win a term in Congress, one term, and was defeated after his one term. And he did win a term in the Illinois House of Representatives, one term. But he lost 8 different times before he finally won the election.
Did he have a reputation of being one of the best presidents we ever had?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I don't think too many people would doubt that. And I think for a number of reasons. First of all, his honesty.
Mm-hmm.
No question about that. Secondly, because of how he handled the war between the states, and of course with the Emancipation Proclamation and what he did there. I don't think anybody would question that George Washington is the father of our country, but Abraham Lincoln was probably the best.
Right.
The best, the most respected. At least from the majority of the people. Now, of course, he wasn't very popular in the southern states for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at his record and what he accomplished in the time that he was in office and what he had to deal with, yeah, I think that's true. And I don't think anybody would argue. A short time before Lincoln's assassination, he dreamed he was going to die. And he related his dream to the Senate. He died in the same bed that had been occupied by John Wilkes Booth, his assassin. His ghost is said to haunt the White House.
Abe Lincoln's ghost
said to haunt the White House, yeah. Now, it's interesting because when Lincoln was assassinated at Ford's Theater, he was carried across the street to a private home, to a boarding house. And they took him in and put him in the first bed they could find, which was on the bottom floor. And that is the same bed that John Wilkes Booth had rented at one time before. So he actually died in the bed of the assassin, the person that killed him.
Wow.
The annual White House Easter egg roll was started by Rutherford B. Hayes and Lucy Hayes in 1878. And of course, Hayes was an Ohio president, born in Delaware. And
Delaware, Ohio.
And spent most of his adult life in Fremont, where he is buried, and where his presidential home and museum is.
Okay.
Great place to visit. Interesting thing about Hayes' birthplace. If you go down to Delaware They just this past summer, maybe two summers ago, erected a statue of Rutherford B. Hayes on the corner. It's on the corner by a pizza shop, right downtown. Just down the street the other direction is a Standard Oil station, a Ohio station, and that is where the house was that Rutherford B. Hayes was born in. They tore it down and built a gas station. Can you imagine?
No.
Grover Cleveland was a draft dodger.
And he became president?
He became president. Twice. He hired someone to enter the service in his place, for which he was ridiculed by his political opponent, James G. Blaine. It was soon discovered, however, that Blaine had done the same thing. Now, during the Civil War, you could pay someone to take your place in the draft. And that's what both of these men did. So rather than serve themselves, you know, they paid somebody $100 and they went to war for them. Right. Yeah.
Do they still have that option today?
I don't believe so, no. They didn't have it when I was around, anyway. James Garfield could write Latin with one hand and Greek with the other at the same time.
Wow.
James Garfield, also an Ohio president, born in Mentor, Ohio, up near the lake.
Okay.
Another great place to visit. His home and farm turned into, of course, a big museum. He was a very interesting man and was also assassinated while in office. He was shot in a train station in Washington by a disgruntled office seeker, somebody that wanted an appointment, and he didn't appoint him, so they killed him.
Oh,
he lived several months after he was assassinated through the summer and suffered immensely. Alexander Graham Bell had invented a device that could detect metal.
Mm-hmm.
And if they could have detected the bullet using this device, they could have saved his life.
Right.
However, what they didn't think about was that the bed that they had placed him on when Alexander Bell was using his electrical device had metal bed springs.
Mm.
So the metal bed springs was interfering with the device and it couldn't locate the bullet. But he suffered tremendously before he passed away.
Oh,
yeah. It was extremely hot. They tried all the different things they could do to cool him down. They had brought ice in and put ice on the floor and had fans that, because they didn't have air conditioning. They tried actually took him up near the sea, up near the coast where it was a little bit cooler. Tried all different kinds of things to try to make him comfortable.
Wow.
Teddy Roosevelt, one of my famously favorite presidents.
Teddy.
In 1912, after being shot in the chest, Theodore Roosevelt finished a speech he was delivering before he accepted any medical help. This was when he was running as a progressive third-party candidate. Remember I mentioned earlier when Taft was running for re-election and Wilson was running against Taft. Roosevelt was so upset with Taft that he decided to create a third party. He created it, the Bull Moose Party, or the Progressive Party. Well, he was to give a speech in Milwaukee, and he had given a speech the day before in Wisconsin, or in another city in Wisconsin, and the afternoon he was to go to the hall to give the speech, he had gotten in an open car outside the hotel. And before he sat down, he was waving to the crowd, and a man stepped out, pulled a revolver out from his vest 7 feet away and shot him point blank in the chest.
Wow.
Now, Roosevelt had a metal eyeglass container in his pocket and a rolled up speech with the metal eyeglass container in his pocket, and that kept the bullet from going all the way in. But it pierced his chest and did go in, but not very far.
Right.
And Roosevelt slumped back into the car, but refused any medical help until he went and gave a speech that lasted over an hour, and then almost collapsed when they took him to the hospital. And at the end of his speech, before they took him to the hospital, he said, "It takes more than a bullet to stop a bull moose."
Yeah, he proved that point, didn't he?
Theodore Roosevelt was the first person to announce to the world that Maxwell House coffee was good to the last drop. So if you ever want to know where that came from, thank Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay. I like Maxwell.
During his lifetime, he wrote 37 books. Roosevelt wrote 37 books.
Okay.
And I have read most all of them.
Have you?
Yes. He's a very interesting author. Sad fact. Theodore Roosevelt's mother and first wife died on the same day in 1884. His wife actually died giving birth to their daughter, Alice. Yeah. And his mother died upstairs in the same house.
Hmm.
Roosevelt himself died from an infected tooth. William Howard Taft did get stuck in the bathtub on his inauguration day and had to be pried out by his attendants.
He must have been a big guy.
He was big. he had a special reinforced steel dining chair. I've actually seen the bathtub that they built for him after this incident occurred, and the four workmen that built the bathtub are sitting in the bathtub.
Oh.
Four men. Four men. Yeah, he weighed in excess of 400 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, he is a very big man. Woodrow Wilson wrote all of his speeches in longhand. He was the only president who held a PhD.
Okay.
The only president with a PhD. Herbert Hoover was the first U.S. president to have a telephone in his office. Up until that time, they had a communication basically by telegraph.
Right.
And they had telephones then, but none in the Oval Office.
Okay.
When First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt received an alarming number of threatening letters soon after her husband became president, at the height of the Depression, the Secret Service insisted she carry a gun. And so she carried a gun in her purse from that time on. Yeah.
Go figure, right?
interestingly enough, and this wasn't in the book, but it came to mind, Benjamin Harrison and his wife Caroline were the first presidential couple to live in the White House when electricity was installed.
Okay.
And they were so afraid of electricity that they wouldn't touch the switches. The electrician, the White House electrician at that time, would have to come in at night and go around and shut all the lights off in the White House because they wouldn't touch the switches. They were afraid they'd be electrocuted. Harry Truman's middle name was just S. It wasn't short for anything. He had no middle name.
Okay.
His parents couldn't decide between two different names beginning with an S, so they didn't give him either one.
Just
left it S, yeah.
Okay.
John Kennedy could read four newspapers in 20 minutes. 20 minutes.
Whoa. The entire newspaper?
Entire newspapers in 20 minutes. He was a speed reader. He's a speed reader. We have another president who was a speed reader, and I'll get to him in a minute.
Okay.
When they auctioned off some of Kennedy's effects, the rocking chair that he always sat in the Oval Office sold for $442,000.
Wow.
I don't know who bought it, but it went for $442,000, yeah. The astrological sign for death, Pluto, was directly above Dallas when JFK was born. Now think about that. I'm not a person that believes in astrology, but that's kind of a coincidence, isn't it?
It is.
Richard Nixon had left instructions for California, Here I Come to be the last piece of music played slowly were he to die in office. California, Here I Come. Of course, he was not born in California. He was born in Illinois, but he lived in California the majority of his life.
Okay.
Family moved there when he was
Richard
young.
S. Nixon.
His mother was a Quaker, by the way.
Oh, she was?
Uh-huh. Okay. And his father was an alcoholic. Yep, she lived a tough life.
I'm sure she did.
Yes, she did.
Oh, my.
Richard Nixon's favorite drink was a dry martini. He was the first U.S. president ever to visit Moscow. This one kind of surprised me a little bit, but because of his stature, I guess it doesn't. Jerry Ford was once a male model.
How tall was he?
Ooh, 6'4" or 5", something
Ooh,
like that.
Tall,
he was a big man,
he?
Yeah. He was a football player, too.
Okay.
Jimmy Carter is a speed reader. He can read 2,000 words per minute. and he's still alive.
I know.
Yeah, and teaches Sunday school almost every Sunday. I'm sorry?
How old is he now?
97 or 98.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Yeah, if you go to Plains, Georgia, and go to the Baptist church that he goes to, you might find him there teaching Sunday school on any given Sunday morning, because they live in Plains. They went back to Plains, yeah. He's one president I always wanted to meet. I always wanted to meet Jimmy Carter. Also, a very good author. He's written at least a dozen books. I've read everything that he's written. It's a shame he was never reelected.
He got such a bad reputation.
Oh, he did. He did, and it wasn't his fault. A very strong Christian man, and I think a lot of times he was ridiculed because of his Christianity, which is a sad thing.
It is very sad thing.
But with what he's done for Habitat for Humanity over the years, and still they're still building houses at 97 years old, he still goes out there and does that work and teaches Sunday school.
Amazing.
Hard to believe.
Yes, it is.
Reaganisms. Ronald Reagan once wore a Nazi uniform while acting in a film during his Hollywood days. Well, that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan married his first wife, Jane Wyman, at Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, California. They got married at the cemetery. And, of course, he was divorced. I think he was the first divorced president that we had. Ronald Reagan sent out the Army photographer who first discovered Marilyn Monroe. Now, this would have been, of course, when he was an actor.
Okay. True.
When this book was written, he was the only divorced president, and he was the only president to be head of a labor union. And he was the president of the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood for a number of years. Yeah. And the last one I have in the presidential clips was Bill Clinton was the first left-handed U.S. president to serve two terms. Now, we've had some other left-handed presidents because Obama was left-handed.
Right.
And he served two terms. Bill Clinton was the first left-handed president to serve two terms. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So those are kind of presidential tidbits that I have found in a book of useless information. And anytime I can run across things that deal with U.S. presidents, it always fascinates me.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's just an interesting subject. Calvin Coolidge, people often ask me who my favorite president was. And ironically, my favorite president was also Calvin Coolidge, as it was with Will Starling, the man that I talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I once portrayed Calvin Coolidge for one of our presidential dinners, and I used one of his remarks at the table that I was sitting at. He was at a dinner one time, and Calvin Coolidge went to banquets to eat.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't go to speak, and very, very seldom did he speak. But he went to this banquet once, and there was a couple sitting beside him, married husband and wife, and this was after he had been elected president. And the lady that was sitting right beside him turned to the president and she said, "Mr. President, I just bet my husband, who's sitting beside me, that I could get you to say more than three words." He put down his fork, turned to her, and said, "You lose." Two words.
Right.
So, yeah. Now, just speaking personally, President William McKinley and I are related. That's my claim to fame.
Okay.
We share a grandfather. My great-grandfather, four times removed, is President McKinley's great-grandfather. And he is actually buried up in Crawford County, just a short drive from here. If you go up Route 4 North, before you get into the little town of, now I can't think of the name of the little town. It's just on the other side of Bucyrus, Chatfield. Just before you get into the little town of Chatfield, on the left-hand side or the right-hand side of the road, there's a church there. I'm not sure what denomination it is now, but it would have been a Methodist church at one time. My great-great-great-grandfather is buried clear in the back of that church, and that's McKinley's grandfather, great-grandfather.
Inside the church?
In the cemetery.
Okay, in the cemetery.
All the way in the back corner of the cemetery. He and his wife, my grandmother. He was a Revolutionary War, in the Revolutionary War. So his marker is there. But after the Revolutionary War, he was given 80 acres of ground in Crawford County for having served in the Revolutionary War. So he moved to Crawford County and then bought another additional 80 acres. So they had 160 acres all total. I have a copy of the original deed. I don't have the original deed. It's in the Crawford County Recorder's Office. But I have a copy of it. And I've been over there many times. But I always tell people, if you want to visit the grave of a presidential grandfather and a Revolutionary War hero, you can go up there and take a look.
So, visit yours, right?
My grandfather as well, yeah. So I'm kind of proud of that. He was a very interesting man. His wife, Ida, had a number of health issues throughout her life. And I think I'm going to have to save the boys till the next time.
Okay.
They had two children, both children died at a very early age. Little Ida died when she was only 4 months old, and Katie lived to be 4 years old. And Ida took it, of course, very, very hard to lose two children. But she suffered from what they now think were epileptic seizures.
Okay.
And President McKinley was extremely devoted to Mrs. McKinley and was a very, very religious man. He was a strong Methodist. Their story of the way they met was very interesting. When he moved to Canton, he had just finished law school and had taken up a partnership with a local law firm there. And he attended the First Methodist Church there in Canton at the time. And Ida was a member of the First Presbyterian Church. Her father was the local president of the bank there. She was a sexton. And they would see each other every morning on their way to church. They would pass each other on a corner, mm-hmm. and they would actually meet up and walk together until they had to split and go to he would go to the First Methodist Church, she would go to the First Presbyterian Church. And so they did this for quite some time, and having conversations and so forth, they developed an interest in each other, and so he proposed, and they eventually got married, but it was because they walked to church with each other together.
Right.
And when they got married in the Methodist Church, and then, of course, she went from the Presbyterian Church to the Methodist Church, and they would have raised the two children as Methodists had they both lived. But his mother lived with them for a number of years. But she would have these seizures, and if they were at an event someplace or if they were hosting something at the White House, she always had to sit. She could never stand because she was too weakened and she had problems with her legs. And they had a signal that if she was about to suffer one of these seizures, mm-hmm. I guess she could tell when they were coming on, she would grip his hand. And he always carried a large silk handkerchief in his pocket that he would take up and cover her face with it so people couldn't see her face because, you know, it would be contorted that until the seizure would pass. So he was tremendously interested in his wife. He's often referred to as one of the most devoted of our presidents to their spouse because of what he did. When he was governor of Ohio, they had rooms at the Neal House, which of course is gone now, but that was directly across the street from the governor's office in the state capitol building. And every day at noon when they would have their lunch, they would have a signal. She would wave her white handkerchief to him, and he would wave a white handkerchief back to her.
Okay.
That was to make sure that she was all right. If she didn't appear in the window, then he would have to go over, and I'm about to lose my voice. He would stop what he was doing and go across the street to the hotel to find out what was wrong with her.
Wow.
Excuse me.
He was a good husband. Good husband.
Very devoted. Mm-hmm. Very devoted.
Good husband.
Well, I don't have much time we got left, but I think I'm done. I'm going to have to leave it up to you.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Fred, for sharing with us. Sorry you lost your voice, but you know it's that type of weather out here nowadays, you know, and the air and the heat and all that getting in your throat. I even had to get me some water. Not only that.
Well, it may come back a little bit.
Right,
here,
starving.
I won't pursue it too much.
Okay. Well, I have a cough drop.
Oh, good. I hope your listeners have enjoyed the conversation.
I'm sure
today.
They have enjoyed it. I mean, you have a wealth of information and share with us. And
well, as I told you, I won't be able to be here in December, but I'll try to get back with you again in January.
Okay. I'll send you a message.
My son lives in Florida, in Tampa, and we're going to be going down sometime. I'm not quite sure just exactly when yet. Depends on the airlines and all that type of thing.
Spending holidays?
Yeah, we haven't been down there for 5 years. The last time we went, we went in the summer the last time, but the time before we'd gone during Christmas, and it was the first time I ever spent a Christmas Eve eating my dinner on the porch of a restaurant, and it was like 70 degrees out. It might have even been warmer than that.
But oh, my.
Yeah, that was a real first to me, having always spent all my Christmases in Ohio. So that was kind of different, kind of interesting.
I'm sure, because it doesn't seem the same if you don't have snow. It's
no,
different.
I don't think so either. And the kids have decided that this is going to be their last year in Florida. I think they're planning on, they want to move back to be closer to my wife and I, and of course my son's wife's parents live in Grove City, so they want to be a little bit closer. So they're thinking about maybe North Carolina, mm-hmm. which does get some snow, you know, occasionally.
Yes,
I think they've had enough of Florida and the weather down there. And
it's still, what, 600 miles away, 500?
Yeah, that's a little bit closer than Florida. So
that's true.
My son says I can drive that, you know, in seven hours or something like that. So
yeah,
that's a little bit closer than an overnight trip.
It sure is.
And
a lot closer.
With plane fares and the things that the way they are now with the airlines, you never know from one day to the next.
That's true. So. We don't know.
But thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I enjoy you coming here and sharing all that you know about our presidents and history. I mean, it's like opening up an encyclopedia. And just getting that information.
Well, I've always had an interest in history, and my grandfather McKinley, my mother's father, was an avid reader. He would read 4 newspapers a day, and always had a book or two going, and he always read books about history. That was his thing. He could tell you almost any battle or every battle that occurred during the war between the states. Very intelligent man. When I was very young, he made me memorize the presidents in order.
Okay.
So I had to say them in order, and he would quiz me on that quite often. He had a desk where he did all of his reading, and he always sat sideways at the desk. He never put his legs underneath the hole in the desk. Mm-hmm. He always sat sideways. And in fact, I have his reading lamp. I inherited his reading lamp, but that's where he did all of his reading, and I always played on the stair steps, which was right at his feet,
mm-hmm.
and so he would often share with me things that he was reading out of the newspaper, you know, current events, and would talk to me, even when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. So that desire to learn and know more about our country and to know more about the history of our country was instilled in me at a very early
mm-hmm.
At a very early time in my life. And I think the love of books and the love of reading came directly from him, because he was always reading. I mean, he was just always reading.
Right.
And he retained a lot of what he read. Clear up until in his 80s, when he passed away, he was still sharp as a tack, you know, and I think that's part of keeping your memory sharp is reading. My mother did crossword puzzles and read, and I haven't gotten into the crossword puzzles yet, but I still love the still love the reading. But you know, people, unfortunately, with all the electronic devices that are around today, the kids of today and even the younger adults have abandoned reading.
I know
reading is not popular as it once was, and it saddens me that is the case, because I think people are missing the boat when they don't try to acquire as much knowledge as they can.
That's true.
As they can. Electronic devices are great. Computers are great. But they've got limitations, and I think we've exceeded the limitations.
Yes, I do too. Thank you, Fred. You made it up until the last few seconds. Praise God.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate it.
So thank God for water, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you have a happy holiday and safe trip to Florida.
Same to you.
Happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas to you, and even Happy New Year.
Yes.
I probably won't see you till after
not
then.
Not until January,
so you
probably.
Be safe. Well, thank you once again for listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here live on WGH Talk. Thank you for your dedication. Thank you for your support. Next week is Thanksgiving, and those of you who may not be listening next week, happy Thanksgiving to you. Till next time, God bless.
You're listening to WWGH.